Happy Tuesday, Minicamp Tuesday, mandatory Minicamp Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. And Ira, before we get to you, we're going to get to the founders of this podcast. I'm going to call them the founding fathers, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Proud to present all of your work at JoeBucksFan.com, your Monday, Wednesday, Friday columns, and of course your Tuesday and Thursday podcasts. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ira, they are introducing the Summer Sales Challenge. You got that, Ira? I know you love a good challenge.
They always got something going on, Steven.
Summer Sales Challenge. This summer, every Ed Morse dealership is standing together to give you the lowest prices, almost like stick carriers uniting. This summer, every Ed Morse dealership is standing together to give you the lowest prices. Let us impress you at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Your satisfaction is our passion. To save you thousands, visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. All the details there are at EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, just west of I-275 on Fletcher. A lot of great offers this summer. EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ira, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, General Manager Mark Wamsley is delivering knockout savings. They're challenging all other dealers to give you our lowest prices and payments on a certified pre-owned Cadillac, like a 2015 SRX for only $25,985. And that includes, Ira, every certified Cadillac comes with a 6-year warranty, roadside assistance, and more. This summer sales challenge is on. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. So proud that you have such great sponsors, Ira. And may I say, your brand new white and black Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa Brandon shirt looks fantastic.
Thank you, Steven. You know, I'm going to issue a challenge to the stick carriers out there, and they're growing in number, Lee. We acknowledge that. New stick carriers uniting every week. And here's my challenge, Steve. Show Joe Bucks fan that you're committed to going to Ed Morse. You know what? This website might help you a little bit get the best deal possible on top of the great deals that they're offering, Steve. Mention that you're a stick carrier, Steve. It goes a long way towards getting the best deal possible. I think our fans need to know that going in.
Of course, Ira, of course. Now, of course, we've got tons of Bucks stuff going. I'm Steve Isbitz, JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper, JoeBucksFan.com, is joining us, of course, today. We are the two-headed monster that runs your favorite website. And, Ira, a lot of good things happening. We're cruising all through the summer. Great traffic at JoeBucksFan.com. Rock Riley pounding at his videos. Nice little note. Some people see us promoting Todd Wright and his golf tournaments. Todd created his own golf tournament series, the Todd Wright Tour, strictly promoted on JoeBucksFan.com and through some other golf-related channels. And nobody creates their own golf tour, Ira. It just doesn't happen unless there's some sort of big charity hook. Todd is just committed to delivering great value and fun on these golf tour events. His latest event in July 8th at Bloomingdale Golf Club out in Bloomingdale, it's already sold out. 100 players already sold out a month in advance.
That doesn't happen, Isbitz. That doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen anywhere in the golf world. It's a great testament to the great fun and beer and the fun that goes on at these golf tournaments, as well as great competition and prizes. But the power of Joe Bucks fan launching this thing with Todd, stunning.
Would you have a problem with me joining one of Wright's golf tournaments as a special guest? Of course, I will pay the initiation fee, Mr. Isbitz. Or are you worried that I will injure myself at one of these tournaments?
No, actually, you know what, Todd, one thing, Ira, which is kind of funny, which I think is right up your alley, Todd has mentioned to me that he would love to do a celebrity hole. So here's how this goes. Let's say we park you for the
all
day.
All of a sudden, I'm at number 14. I'm parked.
We park you at a hole, let's say a par 3, easiest hole on the course, all day. And basically, when the foursome arrives to the hole, you play it with them, and you got to beat Ira. And if you beat Ira, you get an extra raffle ticket.
Have you seen me swing a golf club, Isbitz? I'm just happy I don't whiff over there, DeKemper. Now, just because I pull out my driver on a par 3, I don't want to get snickered at. I don't want to get laughed at. But, Steve, I think that's a fantastic idea. I think we should proceed with that. Now, you got to give me a little bit of shade. You can't have me sitting out there with the sun beating down on me in August.
Well, we'll get you a cart. We'll get you a cart, girl, feeding you beers and Riesling.
It's all sounded very good now, DeKemper.
Anyway.
Very, very promising.
Props to Todd. If you want to see what goes on at these events, JoeBucksFan.com/golf. I'm just blown away. Who the hell sells out golf tournaments a month in advance on a football website? with 100-plus players. It's unbelievable.
I tell him I want a little Riesling station up there in case I need a refill.
All right.
He'll take care of it all.
All right, Lee has finished his lunch, so we are ready to talk some football.
There we go.
First things first, what we're going to get to with the Bucs, Ira, I have no idea what you're going to say.
First thing I want to say is we're 3 days away. Steve, we are 3 days away, Lee, from the Bucs shutting down for 6 weeks. They shut down for 6 weeks. Joe Bucs fan does not. We will continue the podcast, continue my columns, continue Pawlowski's podcast. Rock Riley is going to keep going. He's not slowing down.
Yeah, the train keeps moving. All right, Ira, before we started, you said you wanted to talk run defense.
I do.
Lee and I have no idea what the hell you're going to say, so let it rip.
All right. I was looking at, you know, I was doing a little light reading the other day, DeKemper. My wife likes to kid me because sometimes I'll bring into the little boy's room, you know, a little book of statistics over there. And she goes, where are you going? And I come out.
You're going to the little boy's room.
I come out 35 minutes later, and my head's swimming with buck stats.
There's
over
a
there.
Term called too much information.
Too much information. Well, anyway, I was just looking at the schedule, boys. I was just looking at the schedule.
Takes you 35 minutes to look at the schedule.
No. And it struck me. It struck me. Because let's go over this quickly. Three games. At Miami, home against Chicago, and at Minnesota. Okay. Not the roughest schedule in the world. The Bears are not a good football team. Miami's okay. And we don't know what the heck Minnesota is, although they play pretty well at home. But in terms of Buck run defense, which I think we will both agree. Now, wait a minute. I don't want to assume anything because Isbitz, as a matter of principle, he doesn't want to agree with anything I say.
But he's not taking notes right now.
I'm going to say that Buck defense was substandard run defense in 2016. Not good enough. And what strikes me in these opening three games, those are three pretty good run games. Miami's got Ajayi. He's good. All of a sudden, Chicago unveils Jordan Howard, a heck of a rookie season for Howard. I believe he made the Pro Bowl. And then you go to Minnesota, who picked up Isbitz's free agent gem, Latavius Murray, and they drafted Dalvin Cook, who's going to get plenty of touches. So what I'm saying is a subpar Buck run defense, in my opinion, in 2016 is going to get tested early and often in those first three games, Mr. DeKemper. Before Isbitz disagrees, I want you to weigh in.
Well, he's not taking notes yet, so I think you're safe for the time being. When he's taking notes, that's when you got to look
out. That's trouble.
When talking about the Bucks defense last year, whether it be pass rush, whether it be run, whether it be pass defense, I always have to differentiate between pre-buy, post-buy. That was two completely different defenses. So I really don't know what to judge. I mean, as I spoke with a heavy hitter with the Bucks this past offseason, and Keith Tandy came up, and I said, is it the Keith Tandy who got clowned by Tavon Austin, or is it the Keith Tandy after the buy who would look like a Pro Bowler? And I always have to separate that. It's it's like AD and BC. Is it before the bye or after the bye? So I don't know what to expect from the Bucs defense. I really don't. I mean, I would hope Hargraves improves. I would hope their rush defense improves. But, I don't know which defense we don't
need. Well, Lee, let me make this point.
It was very schizophrenic last year.
Looking back in the two biggest games of the year, which were both on the road.
Yeah, you and I disagree with this, but okay.
You know,
I know what you're talking
now,
about.
Now, look, giving up 200 rushing yards to Dallas is one thing because Dallas can run on anybody.
And they do. Yeah.
But you don't expect it out of Mark Ingram and the Saints. And looking back on that game in the Superdome, Lee, a game which in retrospect would have put the Bucs in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Brees had the benefit of a lot of offensive balance that day, something he didn't have in the game in Tampa 2 weeks previously. And Mark Ingram, basically, I wouldn't say he ran wild, but he ran very effectively. Mm-hmm. And that opened a lot of things for Brees. And as a result, the Bucs give up 31 points in the next-to-last game of the year, a game they had to win. And I didn't like the run defense in New Orleans that day.
Well, to be fair, and you can't pin this all on one guy, but if I recall correctly, Golston did not play.
I believe that's
against
right.
Against the Saints. And he's, very good run defense. As a pass rusher, he's but very good on run. So that might have been a factor.
It was a factor, yeah.
You can't pin that all on him. I'm sure Mike Smith agrees with you that they can improve there. Now, I do know last year, granted this was before the bye, against the Raiders, they weren't that good against the rush. But I can say this. When McCoy was out of the game, when they rotated them out, they were horrid against the run. I mean, the Raiders ran up the middle on them like it was nothing. When they put in Akeem Spence, you know, when McCoy was out of there, it was terrible for all the McCoy haters.
Basically,
oh, by the way,
Raiders, Lee, looking back, the Raiders basically did whatever they wanted
they
in that
game. Literally
did.
You took the words out of my mouth. So I don't disagree with you, but, again, it was such a schizophrenic defense. I don't know.
I'm just saying they're going to face a test right off the bat.
You're darn right they will, yes.
Yeah. Ira, I've got to say this. You basically,
Here we go.
You basically just said that Miami's not that great. It's sort of what you just said. Do you realize the Dolphins won 9 of 11 to close last season?
I said they're a decent team. That's all I said.
They're not a very good team?
They're not a very good team, no. There's only 6 or 7 very good teams, and Miami's not in that group.
So wait a minute. So they win 9 of 11. They go 10-6. They make the playoffs, and this is Kaufman's just brushing them off like they're not very good. They're only good.
They're not an elite team. They're not, you know, forget about New England, but
they're not the Steelers.
The Bucs aren't the Steelers either.
No, they're not.
So anyway, I just think that's
Now hold on. One more thing, Steve. They're going to face this run test. But on the flip side, Steve, I think it's fair to say, from a quarterback perspective, when you're looking at those three games, Tannehill, Mike Glennon, and it looks like, you know,
Bradford.
It's probably going to be Bradford. That doesn't scare anybody.
No, if the Bucs don't go 2-1, then they're not the team we think they are. Let's just keep it real there.
Yeah.
You got to go 2-1. If you're the team we think they are, 10-6, then you have to go 2-1 against
and
Tannehill, Glennon, and Bradford.
Steve, the Bucs have been getting off to lousy starts, Lee. It's happening too often, mm-hmm, year after year, where they dig a hole for themselves.
Yeah, part of that is, sorry, just can't get away with it. Lovie Smith was one of the biggest jokes I've ever seen as an NFL coach. And it's too easy for me to blame it on Lovie Smith. But that guy, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. If it hacks people off, hacks people. If Al Davis was owning the Bucs and Lovie Smith did what he did for Al Davis, Al would have done Lane Kiffin, where he fired him with cause, where he didn't get paid.
And, Steve, the 2 years under Shiano, they got off the bad start.
They did. That's what I wrote down.
Well, 1 year
Shiano
they did,
was 6-4. Comes out of the blocks. Brand-new coach.
No. Before that, before the 6-4, the first month of the year, I think they struggled. I believe.
Year they were terrible.
You're right. I think they were 1-2.
Then they caught their stride.
I think they were 1-2, and then they caught their stride.
Very
you're
early.
Right. You're right. Yeah. Good catch.
He tried to get me with that 6-4, but I dig a little deeper.
You were ready.
I dig a little deeper.
You had your shields up.
You're a mollusk. All right, Kaufman, look, the run defense, that's going to dovetail me into Noah Spence, because it was a little one-off comment. At the end of maybe our last podcast or two podcasts ago, I think it was Lee or you said, hey, we can all agree that we're very high on Noah Spence. And I said, I'm not very – don't put me in the category of very high on Noah Spence. I can't go there, and I'm going to tell you why. Now, I got nothing against the guy, and he proved he's a warrior. He's got the right mentality.
He's tough.
He's willing to play hurt and tough and play hard, and he's impressed his teammates. And when you can do those things as a rookie, you're off to a great start. But – let's go look at the facts. The guy did get hurt. It was hurt, not his fault, but players get hurt, and a lot of players who get hurt become injury prone. His last 5 games, no sacks, 3 tackles.
This is in the fight to get a playoff spot.
5 games, no sacks, 3 tackles. Now, if he's playing injured, he's gutting it through, there's a lot of ways to look at that. You could say, hey, look at what the guy did. It's a miracle he was on the field. Well, then there's also the flip side of what the hell is he doing on the field?
Yes.
And
we've also had that argument about Gerald McCoy at times.
There's a lot of ways to look at that. So we don't know, but it still becomes an unknown about Mr. Spence. When he entered the league, Mike Smith, seasoned football man, told us all, ooh, back off. He might be a situational guy for a while. He may not play the run so great. We're going to ease him in, work him in. Well, you know what? All year went on. He never really played great against the run. He had some moments, but this run defense sunk, and the new X factor in the mix in a lot of ways was Spence and Ayers and some other rookies.
Now, you're not going to put a final grade on a rookie now.
I'm sorry,
Steve.
I meant, Spence and Ayers.
Steve,
no, I'm not.
You're not going to put a final grade.
I'm not putting any final grade on him, but you were talking about run defense, and none of us can sit here and say we know that Noah Spence can play the run. He's undersized. And if the Bucs, if they don't play a lot of 3-4, which we don't think they will, if they go 4-3 and maybe a little more 3-4, I'm not sure he's a very good guy. against the run. So that makes him more of a situational pass rusher. And I don't know. But
do you think Baker can help in that regard?
I think Baker is more of a pass rush guy. They got him, I think, more as a pass rusher. He had 6.5 sacks. They haven't had a defensive tackle next to McCoy with that many sacks in a long time.
And Jack Smith's no factor against the run.
Very little.
Well, he's at least okay, but he's hurt. You don't even know if he's going
to
play.
And that leads you to Robert Ayers.
Leads you to Robert Ayers and Golston. And those are your two bookend ends. It's going to be interesting, but my point was Noah Spence against the run. If the regime tries to make him a three-down guy, which they're saying he is, Jason Light's calling him an animal. Mike Smith changed course a few weeks ago and said he's a three-down guy. We don't know if he can play the run. That's all I'm saying.
Lee, do you think there's a chance that maybe in the beginning of the season or after the 3-5 start that Mike Smith tweaked this defense and he was so worried about the big plays they were giving up in the passing game and the completion percentage that he went hell-bent in terms of a system and an alignment. Hey, we got to load up against the pass, and as a consequence, the run defense suffered. Would you go that far?
It's possible. It's a fair point. Steve and I, you've mentioned this before on a podcast. Steve and I are sitting on something. If we can get someone on the record, it will blow so many people's minds about why the defense got so much better pass defense. You know, when the Bucs say communication, that's, well, it's true, but it's so glossed
now
over.
You put out a big tease over there, DeKemper. You going to back that up?
Isbitz has done it before. We got to get someone on the record.
Yeah,
we've got a very good source that told us something that if we put it out as unsourced, we would get ripped apart.
You're not dealing with leakers over here, Stephen.
No,
you want names, not leakers.
We're not dealing with Comey, no, or some 25-year-old that's in jail right now. No, we're not dealing with leakers, but unless we get someone on the record.
I got faith in you two gentlemen that you will get that on the record at some point.
Well, you notice that in the past couple months, we weren't screaming about the safety so much. There's a reason for that.
Okay. Steve, one more quick point before I'll let you weigh in. I will allow you to weigh in, Stephen.
Thank you, Ira.
Thank you. Steve, I'll say this. Let's put it in perspective. You know, in the pantheon of concerns of run defense against pass defense, I think a pass defense concern weighs a lot more than a run defense concern in this league. And it's tough to be very good against both. So maybe I'm picking on them a little bit here.
It's got to go hand in hand. What Lee's talking about, yeah, sure. Yeah, we've mentioned this before. Yes, we have some information that we know is rock solid. We just need, the point is we need somebody on the record to say it because they just can't go any other way.
They only gave up 13. It was in my column yesterday. The first eight games, I believe they gave up 26 touchdowns, the Buck defense. That doesn't count returns. This is, you know, rush,
yes,
touchdowns and pass touchdowns allowed. 26. The last 8 weeks after the 3-5 start, they gave up 13 touchdowns. Very respectable.
Well, here's one for you about the defense. Was Mike Smith learning on the job? What I mean by that is, you know, we talked about Noah Spence, and initially
he learning his personnel on
there
the
you
job?
Go. You know, they immediately, when they drafted Ryan Smith, they were moving him to safety. And I remember Mike Smith, I asked him about Ryan Smith 2 weeks in a training camp, maybe 3 weeks. They've had a few practices under their belts. And Mike Smith is usually a chipper guy, always putting a positive spin on everything, always has a smile on his face, really, really loves his job, loves just everything about him is positive. I asked him about Ryan Smith moving to safety. All of a sudden, it was like a curtain came down upon his face. He went from smiling and jovial to like blank face, kind of frowned, looked at his shoes. He said he's got a lot of learning to do. He's got ways to go. And for Mike Smith to say that, and eventually they gave up on it, November, December, and they moved him back to corner. And if you listen to the right people at the Bucs, everything's hunky-dory.
Steve, I like the fact that if they make a mistake, they tend to acknowledge it. I like that about this regime.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very candid regime as regimes go. Just to finish the point, what Lee and I know about the Bucs defense and what partially caused it to change, what we don't know is how great the impact really was. Now, we know it was a real. How great? I don't know. We don't know. However, it was significant. But I think I look at the run defense, Ira. Look at the year Quan Alexander had. Led the league in solo tackles. The guy was a monster. Absolute monster. Lavonne David, he was okay by Lavonne David's standards.
Came on strong in December.
Yeah. You know. But he didn't have a great year, but he was still a very good player. Darryl Smith was probably the best strong side linebacker they've had in a while. Very solid. You can't sit here and think about all the times Darryl Smith screwed up. because you're just not going to think of it. So when you've got very strong linebacker play and the corners tackle, Grimes made some big plays in the run game.
And Hargraves isn't afraid to stick his nose in there.
Exactly. And I believe, well, forget about the safeties for a minute. The issue in the run game was on that defensive line, and it's safety.
They were gashed.
And it's safety. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. But it's a fair point by you. I want to move over to your column, Ira. Your Monday column, Robert Ayers. Basically, you're calling him. You called him the straw that stirs the drink, the man with the big balls in town, waving his stick carrier, if you will.
Unafraid what people think about him, doesn't care.
And you called him a change agent. I like the column. If you haven't read it yet, it's at joebucksfan.com. But how much of an impact do you really think Ayers has going forward? That's my question to you. Going forward, we get that he was a change agent.
I think he's got to do a little more on the field, Steve, to continue in that role, because at some point, you got to lead by example. You can't have another injury-riddled season where, you know, 6.5 sacks, I think the Bucs envisioned more for Robert Ayers. I think Robert Ayers envisioned more for Robert Ayers. He had a breakout year with the Giants the year before. He cashed in. I don't have a problem with that. But 6.5 sacks for a guy who you're really counting on, Steve, that's not good enough, in my opinion. You know, missing 4 games with that ankle injury contributed to that 3-5 start.
Very much so.
Lee, he's not going to change his attitude. He's still going to be the badass, but he's got to do a little more on the field to, I think, you know, buttress. There's your word, baby. To buttress his reputation as the clubhouse leader.
Oh, he is clubhouse leader, no question. I remember.
There's no question, Lee, what guys said when we asked them what changed during the bye week. Who spoke up? There was no question. Robert Ayers was the guy.
Well, the best story I heard, and it was from a suit with the Bucks. They were watching practice last training camp, and they wouldn't tell me who it was, and I understand why. Someone screwed up in practice. Someone on the defense, and they said, "I'm sorry." Apparently, Ayers lit into him like there was nobody's business. Dog cussed him. "Don't be apologizing. I don't want to hear that again. You do your job. There's no apologies, none of this. I'm sorry, blankety blank. If you can't do your job, get the hell off the field. We'll bring some." I mean, just unloaded on the guy.
And can't you see Dirk Cutter just smiling the whole way, Lee?
Yeah, the same person that told me this said they didn't. They knew he was a fiery guy. They didn't expect, and I'm going to directly quote the source, they didn't expect a little bit of sap in him. That's what they say. He's got a little bit of sap in him. And that's what sap would do. He would. You know, we've seen clips, NFL films. He'd cuss people out in practice.
We need a little more sap to player, Steve.
But if you look at his career, he's kind of a 7-sack guy.
He is.
And he got 6.5 last year, albeit it was injury-prone. He missed.
The 9.5 was an outlier, right?
Yeah.
It seems to be.
Yeah. So he's like a 7-sack guy. But, yes, they did miss him the early part of the season when he was out. He blew an ankle against Arizona, if I remember correctly. What, was he out, like 4 games, 5 games?
Yeah, he missed the same game that Doug Martin got hurt.
Same game. He missed 4 games total.
Right. Yeah, they missed him. They missed him.
Well, I got to say this, Ira, then I got to hit you with two things. One, Lee's on the money. I was just looking it up here. 6.5 sacks for Ayers. That was his second highest total of his career. Previously, 5, 5.5, and then that outlier season with the Giants with 9. But I got to ask you this, Ira. A lot of fans, they're interested in who's named captain of this team. The players vote for captain. Now, I'm not here talking about the value of the captaincy, what that really means for a team. That's a whole nother discussion.
Unless it's Josh Freeman.
unless it's Josh Freeman. However, you just called Ayers the clubhouse leader. So, my question to you is, this team votes for 2 defensive captains. Is Robert Ayers voted by his teammates as a captain for 2017?
I got to go with Quan and Ayers, in my opinion, Lee. Now, with all due respect to a 5-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle, you know, that might hurt McCoy a little bit. But I think Alexander's the face of the defense.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think Hard Knocks, I'm going to stick with that. I think he's going to emerge as a big-timer on Hard Knocks. They're going to love his attitude. And Ayers, based on, you know, the guy was the agent of change last year, and I don't think players forget that.
What about Mr. Miko?
Well, he's one of their best defensive players, mm-hmm. without question. He was better than the 3 of us could ever imagine.
Yes.
He would put in last year. Some people think he might have been the best corner in football. I believe on some statistics by PFF, which I don't go by necessarily. But, Steve, you know what? Lowest passer rating when you know, they picked on a particular cornerback. He ranked very high.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'll say no on Grimes because frankly, he missed a 3, 4, 5 OTAs. I don't think this team would vote in a guy who missed some OTAs. That's just on a pure team
He's
vote.
He's also very
standpoint.
Soft-spoken. He tends to be soft-spoken.
Yeah, very soft-spoken. Now, Ira, well, there's a lot of Gerald McCoy haters out there, a lot of doubters, a lot of non-believers, whatever you want to call them. So you just said, you just told us that you believe McCoy's teammates will not vote him as captain again for this year, after maybe 4 years in a row, 3 years in a row of being a captain. So I ask you, if that happened, would that injure Gerald McCoy? Would he pout? Would he have an internal breakdown? What do you think his mental state would be?
Well,
fair question.
I think, Lee, that might reinforce what three guys told him at the Pro Bowl. You got to be better. Now, he was very public with that. Steve, he didn't look like he was pouting about it. It looked like it motivated him. So, you know, maybe we see a 10-sack year out of Gerald McCoy instead of 7.5, which seems to be his ceiling.
When you were talking about he didn't seem like he was pouting, are you talking about the time that he was at the podium?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I thought he was beyond pouting. I thought he was, like, clinically depressed. Holy cow.
Well, I don't know. If he was, I don't think he would have brought it up, Lee.
Oh, the body language and everything. The body language that day that him and Jameis spoke, it couldn't have been more dynamic, the difference between the two. Jameis was, I mean, he looked like he was ready to tick off and start. I mean, Jameis was over the top, excited, beaming smile, almost controlling himself not to start dancing at the podium. He was so excited. McCoy was drooping. He was hung over the podium. Woe is me. I got it. I just couldn't. To me, that was beyond pouting. That was like, holy smokes, you need to go talk to a counselor.
Steve, I'll say this. By the end of the 2017 season, I think it's important that Gerald McCoy is one of the first three or four defensive tackles that people mention in the National Football League, and I don't think that's the case right now. I do not think he's one of the three or four guys that roll off the tongue.
Should be.
You know, and I just I think he's been eclipsed. By Aaron Donald and some other guys.
Well, yes, of course, Aaron Donald, no question about it. I mean, the players rank him top 100. I mean, you know, say what you will about that. That speaks that players respect him at least. So what if some clown working in Minnesota does? Who cares?
You know.
Well, I'll say this, I think we're splitting hairs on that aspect. If he's the fifth best defensive tackle in the league or the third best or the second, I don't think it really matters. It's interesting to watch going forward with McCoy. On the defensive tackle note, I was reading something in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution last night, and I forgot Dontari Poe is a member of the Falcons, which made me say, oh, geez, crap, you know, and I watched a whole little feature on him, a video. And
he's 340 at least, right, Steve?
No, he trimmed down. He's actually got a weight clause in his the way they did his contract.
Doesn't he get a big bonus or something?
Yeah, they didn't give him. He doesn't weigh in for a penalty. He gets a bonus if he hits certain weigh-ins, and he looked pretty darn lean. And they asked him about it, and he's like, "No problem at all." You know, like, "Hey, I'll drop 20 for 150 grand."
They got Grady Jarrett next to him, Lee, and he had a big Super Bowl, so you know he could be a breakout guy.
So
anyway, the thing about McCoy being, let's say hypothetically, the fifth best tackle, which I don't believe, but let's just throw that out there. And of course, the haters will be jumping up down. See. So you would get rid of the fifth best player in his position in the league. You get rid of the guy. Come on.
Right. He's still a very good player. Let's not sell him short, Lee. You're right.
All right, Ira. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa. Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. Just fantastic dealerships. I don't even know what else to say. And I do have to say, your new white shirt, it looks new. Did your wife comment that it looks very sharp? And
I brought three new shirts home last week, Lee, different colors that I didn't have before. And, you know, I went to a wedding last week in Buffalo. My wife was thinking I should maybe have an Ed Moore shirt on with my suit. I go, no, honey, I'm not going that far.
What was the word I used when you walked up?
Incandescent. No.
That's a good one.
What was it?
Dapper.
Dapper. You know what? You know when the last time I was called dapper? In the sixth grade when I went up for that spelling bee final and missed out on raising.
Sixth grade.
Somebody said I was dapper.
I thought you were going to talk about Mariel Berkowitz.
And by the way, I knew how to spell dapper, but not raising.
Sixth grade. Let me set the stage.
Sixth grade. PS-131, Stephen.
World War II is just coming to an end. Everyone's happy.
The Marshall Plan is being put in. The Marshall Plan.
People are kissing in the streets, and
right,
Ira's got a spell.
People are Googling Marshall Plan.
Actually, I was in second grade when
World War II ended.
I think I was in second or third grade when JFK was shot in Dallas.
Do you remember that?
I do remember it because the teachers were crying.
Really?
And I said, Miss Gentile, what happened? And she said, I just read your math test, Kaufman. I'm in tears over here.
Yeah, she said, stick to writing, Ira.
Yeah, I was too young to remember that. I was only a year old.
Yeah, way before my time. All right, Ira.
I do remember Reagan and a Pope getting shot.
There you go.
I remember that.
Let's go to the offensive line. Something we were just talking about off the air here. Not that we're really on the air. We're just doing our thing. But it sounds fun to say off the air. Ali Marpet obviously is moving to center. They call it an experiment, but this is going to be a lasting experiment, one that they're going to give some serious time to. And obviously what I think is encouraging, if there is such a thing as encouraging in OTAs, it's been very clean snaps. I haven't seen any issues in these rainy practices.
Underwear
nothing.
Football is bits. Underwear football.
Well, look, a guy can still have trouble snapping the ball. Not a hint of trouble. Anyway.
Lee, the Bucs can't stop themselves from telling us how well Marpet's doing in practice. And Isbitz is lapping up every line.
Stay with me, Ira. Don't get off course here. obviously, a high school kid can snap the ball. You got some great high school centers. Never mess up a snap. So let's calm down. Playing on much worse conditions than the NFL fields. But Marpet, if he struggles at center, so we're talking about, let me just put a hypothetical out there. Bucs play four games.
Ndamukong Suh pushes him around in the opener.
Bucs play four games and Marpet struggles. He's struggling. He's got some penalties, maybe a bad snap. He's getting pushed around because he's off balance. He's playing in without confidence, and he's struggling and is a problem. What happens next? Do they move him back to right guard and Sid Sweezy? What's the plan?
Well, if they're 2-1 after 3 weeks, you ride it out, DeKemper. If they're 0-3 or 1-2, I might make a change. Look, I think all three of us are in agreement that he was kind of on the brink of being a Pro Bowl guard. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a Pro Bowl guard, but he was getting there. Maybe one more year, and people didn't know Ali Marpet from Hobart College. The Bucs haven't been in the playoffs. They're not a high-profile team yet. And so that hurts them in Pro Bowl voting. So, some fan in Buffalo.
Walla Washington.
They don't know Ali Marpet.
Walla Washington.
But, Lee, if he's struggling, and a team is struggling, that might force Cutter's hand.
Well, I think the key element here is what's Sweezy doing. If Sweezy's playing at an elite level, which they claim that he can, we don't know that yet. Oh, he's taking notes. Here we go. He's like a defense counsel in a court. He's taking notes. He hears a guy at the stand. I think it depends on Sweezy. If Sweezy's playing like they claim he can, and Bamfield's playing very well, I don't know. I really don't know what you do with Marpet there.
You're right. There's a lot of Steve. Suppose Sweezy's playing really well and Pamfield's struggling. Maybe you move Marpet back to right guard and Sweezy to left. Steve, that's a possibility.
To me, you're dodging the question, Ira.
You're not going to bench Ali Marpet.
Okay,
that's what you're getting.
No, that's the answer. So you don't bench Marpet. So let me advance this further. We'll change the hypothetical. We're eight games in, or even we're at the bye week in week 12, whenever it is this year, week 11. And Marpet's is not a great center. He's the ball average, and he's just not going to be the guy you thought he was
at
center.
So the grand experiment's not working.
Grand experiment's not working. Well, who gets the benching? Well, what happens here? I mean, you're saying Marpet will not ride the bench. They will move him to right guard because he's a darn good right guard.
I think that's the only thing you can say with assuredness, okay, is that Marpet moves back to right guard. Now, if Dotson's struggling, you move Pamfield to right tackle or whatever. You don't bench. Lee, you disagree? You see any scenario where Marpet's benched? He doesn't start.
Again, I think it depends. If Sweezy's playing well and Pamfield's playing well, why would you potentially screw up two positions?
Of course, Marpet's your future. And he's a damn good right guard.
And how much money is Sweezy being paid?
We're under the impression that your pedigree's not going to matter, Steve. Not matter.
The money end of it's very interesting, so I'm going to throw this question at Lee. Lee, the Bucs so far have committed $15 million, $14 million over 2 years to Sweezy. Would you pay $14 million for a second-round draft pick if you're the ownership?
Would you pay $14 million?
Yeah. If somebody
said,
if
you're getting production, why not?
No. I mean, if another team came to you and said, "We'll sell you our draft pick," let's say it was old baseball rules, "We'll sell you our draft pick for $14 million." Would you buy it?
Depends what your scouting department says, because they're always a year ahead. Depends who you're. I mean, there's a lot of factors involved.
You're trying to get Marpet benched, and it's not going
to
work, is it?
No, I'm not trying to get him benched at all. I agree with you, Ira. I think he doesn't get benched. But the valid point is as well is, hey, if the team's playing well, it's about winning games.
Yeah.
I don't know about Sweezy and investment, because as we get through the season, here's the thing. If we're 10 games in, the investment in Sweezy becomes in the past.
Yes.
You know, because he's not guaranteed anything next year.
And they're not committed past the season.
Right. That's so it changes, but it's a very interesting subject.
Here's another element to the Marpet thing. You know, a lot of fans are down on Dotson. And great guy. Steve and I have never thought he was an all-pro guy.
A lot of penalties.
Yeah, and he's getting up there in age. Now, Pamfield, you know, the Bucks have already said, George Warhop's already said, Pamfield's a backup tackle. Whoever needs to go, if Smith goes down, Donovan Smith. If Dotson goes down, Pamfield fills in, period.
That's right.
If Dotson's kind of struggling, Pamfield's already shown he can play right tackle. Last year, they moved him right tackle late in the season. He did well. There's your Sweezy goes to left guard. Pamfield flips to right tackle. Marpet goes back to right guard.
Dotson's on the bench.
Yeah, Dotson's on the bench.
Yeah.
It goes back to what Cutter's been saying over and over. We're getting our five best offensive linemen out there.
Steve, so much can happen with an injury, you know, God forbid, to Donovan Smith or something. You know, to have all five offensive linemen play the whole year,
unusual.
That's a pipe dream. It's a pipe dream.
Well, and the reality is, as we sit here in June, so much of this comes down to the team's record.
Yes.
You know, it's all about the team's record.
All
because
about wins.
If you're already looking at, if it's Thanksgiving and you're looking at the draft next year, because you're one game under 500 and you're in last place in this division, then it changes the animal.
Yes.
So
you look at things totally different if they're 0-3.
Sure.
Lee. They're looking to make changes at
well,
that
like
point.
A couple of years ago, Lovey's first year, they were playing Dotson at left tackle. You know, see if he can handle it. You know,
yeah.
They were preparing for the draft.
But we don't think that's going to happen, of course. We think this team is a good football team, and that's going to be playing at least meaningful games in December. So, anyway, it's
Steve, our next podcast will be done at One Buck Place this week, correct?
Yeah, this week, everybody listening this morning or may have already started mandatory mini camp. That means your pal, Mr. Iverson, Chris Baker, will show up. And you know what? He's a fun-loving kind of guy. Ira, I suggest you go up to him and say, hey, look, I called you Allen Iverson. And, what he says.
Yeah, and he's going to say, who says I didn't like the practice? And you know what? I might tell him.
I think you should tell him.
I might tell him.
I think you should tell him. If he pops you in the face, we'll take you to Northside Hospital and say,
if he wants to leak it, if he wants to be a leaker, Lee, once I tell him, that's on Swaggy over there.
Yeah, if he pops you, well, we got Dolman Law Firm to help you out.
There you go.
So, Kaufman, yeah, we got 3 days worth of mandatory minicamp, and we'll be talking to everybody and everybody we can and having some fun.
Did you enjoy doing the commission's podcast, Mr. Isbitz?
Yes and no. It was fun to fill in for the commission and step in there.
Do you now have new appreciation for what the commission does out there on a weekly basis?
Well, I always had a great appreciation for it. It's the reason his podcast is so unique and so good is because it takes a lot of time. I mean, I've talked to Justin about this. It takes him about 4 hours to put together his podcast because there's a lot of cutting and editing in all those Bucks takes and setting it up, and it's really fantastic stuff. But anyway, it was fun stuff.
But I am now ahead of him on the iTunes chart. Let's mention that again.
Yeah, on iTunes, Ira, yes. So if you search Buccaneers or Bucks, you're going to see your top 10 podcast. Now it's a real-time formula, so it's not exact, but the bottom line is top two podcast episodes over a good chunk of time have belonged to Mr. Kaufman.
Oh, now it's two episodes. See, now.
So it's two episodes. So we'll see. But again, it's a free-flowing kind of thing. Don't get cocky, Ira.
No, you can't because I know the commission is going to try to outwork me, Steve. That's in the back of my mind.
So, and that's just iTunes. There are other sources of the podcast. Justin has a lot more out there. So it's just stay in your lane, Kaufman.
So stick carriers, we will we'll convene again from One Buck Place, Steve.
We will be live at One Buck in our special nook and getting it done. Lee, any parting words for the great people?
Heard this on NFL radio the other day. It really doesn't mean anything, but it's cool to learn. Anthony Beck was on NFL radio with our friend Pat Kerwin and Jim Miller. And I wasn't aware of this. You know, we all knew that Marpet was going to be moved to center. Marpet said he had heard roughly a week before Cutter announced it that Marpet was going to center. And there was all kinds of signs before that was going to happen. Cutter made it official. Well, Beck, among many other things he does, and he does many things, he also trains tight ends for the draft. And I guess he has his camp down here, his training camp for tight ends. Well, I think it's the Skyway Park that Jameis uses a lot. He brings receivers out there.
I think it might be Skyway Park, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's where Beck had his tight ends he was working out. And Beck said on the other side of the field, there was Jameis working out with receivers, and Marpet was the center. Early February, Beck said. Early February.
Beck has good contacts, Steve, in the Buck organization. He's fairly wired, Beck. And you know what? He's made a nice name of himself in the Tampa Bay community. I always enjoyed talking to him when he was a player with the Bucks. He wasn't a great player, but he was a smart guy, and I went to him a lot to find out what the pulse of the team was. I was the only guy talking to Anthony Beck. They used to laugh at me. Well, yeah. Hey, what are you talking about? Guy, he's got 12 catches, Kaufman, on the season. I said, I want to know what's going on with this football team.
Interesting. I didn't know that, Ira. Obviously, Beck has great contacts because he works for the team. He's been doing it now maybe 3-4 years. So good stuff. It is interesting to know, you know, any glimpse you can get into what Jameis is doing behind the scenes.
They are committed to this Marpet move, Lee, without question.
Yeah, like I said, I just thought it was cool that Jameis is working out with Marpet in early February, not just taking snaps, but pretending wine calls, you know, things of that nature.
They're all in on this, Steve. I think it would be difficult, not impossible, difficult for them to backtrack on it and admit that it's a mistake if it's really not working
out. I always go back to this. I know I'm repetitive about this, but the weekend that Marpet was drafted, Jason Light, former offensive lineman at Nebraska, said at the podium, Marpet projected as a center.
Week one.
Here's the thing, Ira. I don't think it's difficult to go back at all. I think that's ridiculous. If he stinks, you make a change. They're not in the business to lose games here.
Well, I'm saying if he's struggling and it's hurting the team, then you get second-guessed.
If he's struggling, he's not playing center. It's just that simple. Okay. They'll figure out another way, but if he's really struggling, there is no point from Jason Light on down to keep this guy struggling. That could be a career killer. Why leave him out there when he's struggling? If everybody can see it, if Dave Moore's on the radio broadcast saying, well, Marpet clearly is slow with his feet and he's not recognizing stuff, I think they have to change it.
He gets a nice test week one with the Ndamukong Suh lining up right over him, Lee. Doesn't get much tougher than that.
I will use I'll use the dangerous statement of, I think we all agree that Marpet will be just fine at center. None of us are really concerned that he's going to suck. But it is an interesting X factor. All right, Kaufman, take your fine clothes and your fancy watch and your new haircut and get the hell out of here.